But one of the main things that like attracted me and made me quite literally fall in love with the Liberadores is their notion precisely of not recuperating land or ancestral territory, but freeing Mother Earth. They said exactly like that. We are all enslaved, human beings and all the other beings, then that goes from bees, bacteria, trees, plants, everything in nature is enslaved. Therefore, we are also enslaved. And the only way to free ourselves is to free Mother Earth.
It's very fantastical for the Western mind to understand this, but when you are really walking with these other ways of seeing, other ways of knowing, and other ways of feeling and sensing, it's really about a sensory experience too. That's why I say it's not like, you know, in the vague ether, it's in our bodies, you know? So it's really about opening those capacities.
Welcome to The Secret Ingredient, a podcast produced at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas, that takes a look at the relationships between food, the planet, politics, the economy, our psyches, and ourselves. Hosted by Tom Philpott, food and agriculture correspondent for Mother Jones Magazine, filmmaker, writer, and activist Raj Patel of the Lyndon Baines Johnson School of Public Affairs, and me, Rebecca McEnroy of KUT Radio.
Today's secret ingredient is each other's. Now, this may sound a little odd, and indeed it does violence to our grammar, but we've got two incredible people to help us understand what that means. We're joined by Charlotte Maria Sainz, who is learning and walking with various indigenous peoples' liberatory struggles. She teaches in occupied Ohlone territory in the Northern California Bay Area, and she does research around the Zapatista movement's pedagogy of the seed. And she's joined today by a comrade who is working with indigenous groups in Colombia, and particularly the NASA struggle for the liberation of Mother Earth. And that is Rita Valencia. Now, Rita is joining us from Oaxaca today. And I wonder, Rita and Charlotte, whether we can begin to understand this idea of each other's by thinking about its opposite. Because if the secret ingredient today is each other's and the way in which life and us are imbricated with each other, the opposite of that is a very liberal and individual you, a solitary you that is bound up with all the things that we talk about here on The Secret Ingredient. It's the liberal you is all about patriarchy and about individualism and about a certain kind of white supremacy. And so maybe we can begin to understand each other's by asking about its opposite. And so I wonder, Rita and Charlotte, whether I can ask you first, what's wrong with you?
Thank you, Rita.
Thank you. Yes, so this is Rita, and well, there are so many things that are wrong, but perhaps we could start with the notion of how everything has to be achieved within a lifetime. I would say that's one of the problems of thinking about you or the individual, the time scale. I would also say the human scale. And in a third point, I would probably mention the separation between nature and our individual selves, who are basically very vulnerable if we are considered as individuals in front of nature, Mother Nature, or the wilderness out there. This idea that everything can be achieved by and nothing at the same time by one individual is basically what it's at the core of our societies, but importantly also of our movements. It gets very complicated because when we say that like we're working with social movements, just like trying to keep the perspective of the things that we have learned with them, through them, from them, and also our role as activists or people in academia, it all gets very, very complicated, I would say, because where do we put the separation between our individual voices and something that is bigger and more important than ourselves?
So I have a question about this idea of the you, because I think in some ways, a lot of times the you is like fetishized in the Marxist sense. It's something mm-hmm. that keeps us, when we're focused on that, it's something that keeps us from the bigger project. And I think in terms of identity politics, it's important to respect people and where they're coming from. And at the same time, it also diverts our attention and focus. And I wonder how you speak to that and try at this point in time to change the direction of the conversation to focus attention on the larger picture.
You know, I come across this tension with my students all the time. They're like, you're always telling us about the we, you know, how important the we is, but what about me? You know, I might be from a subjugated identity that has historically been constantly negated, you know, and this is my time now. I came here to you and this school and this program to be all about me, right? So it's not an either or. That's one of the problems in this thinking, is that within this modernist framework, everything is binary, or it's either or. It does not erase who you are. On the contrary, each of us are these precious gifts to existence with all of these often untapped potentials and talents and skills and who we are in our unique configuration, just the same as any bee, right? Any plant, any animal brings that. And you are absolutely indispensable and essential to this larger project of life. So it's not an either or. And that is very much in the indigenous, Mesoamerican indigenous philosophies that we are immersed in, is understanding that the role and value of each, not just each person, but each being, right? So that we were always in this intersubjective relationship to each other of respect, of like profound respect. And so that is my role as an educator, is helping, accompanying the process within the framework of our you know, learning process, each person, each student in this case, to realize that potential and to see their unique role in social change. So that is a false binary that we have to, you know, quickly realize that here we are again enacting these, you know, modernist, white supremacist, however you want to, the conglomeration of the complex thinking that makes us think we have to choose, you know, but really we need all of us in our unique, you know, presentations of self within the larger project.
I wanted to break in and another aspect of this whole question of the individual and the collective, I think, is in social movements here in the U.S., there is this, you know, I think Rita was kind of getting at this earlier, there is this real sort of instant gratification idea, and something like, you know, Occupy Wall Street rises up and it goes on for some months and it sort of peters out after a while, and, you know, Wall Street is still, you know, the dominant economic force in the United States, and people get sort of discouraged. And I feel like indigenous movements in Latin America work on a much, much different time scale. They've been around for a lot longer. And, you know, this idea of projects that are started today are 200-year projects is, you know, completely foreign, you know, to sort of white American sort of Western thinking. So Rita, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your work in Colombia, what's now Colombia, with the NASA people. Tell us a little bit about what's going on there and the projects that you've got going.
I got there basically, I would say, by chance or destiny. I have been working and walking with the Liberadores de la Madre Tierra, and basically they are part of the Creek movement, which is one of the oldest indigenous movements in Latin America, in Colombia and in the Cauca region. It's a relatively like young organization, in such as they started like re-entering the sugarcane plantations that are basically like their ancestral territory just at the end of 2014, December 2014. In that sense, we could say that like they have been around for 5-6 years now. But effectively, like they are coming from a struggle that started when the Spaniards arrived. And they are extremely conscious of their history. That's one of the most striking things for me. They have a different notion of time. They can talk about La Gaitana, who's basically an indigenous woman who organized a defense against the Spaniards 400 years ago. And they can talk about Manuel Quintín Lame, who's basically another leader that organized land recuperation at the beginning of the 20th century. So everything gets kind of like compacted, and they walk through their territory having all this with them all the time. So that's very interesting. But one of the main things that like attracted me and made me quite literally fall in love with the Liberadores is their notion precisely of not recuperating land or ancestral territory, but freeing Mother Earth. They said exactly like that. We are all enslaved, human beings and all the other beings, then that goes from bees, bacteria, trees, plants, everything in nature is enslaved. Therefore, we are also enslaved. And the only way to free ourselves is to free Mother Earth. And the first step towards that is to basically cut down all the sugar cane. It's huge. It's incredible to see that, like, that monocrop that is, I think, one of the largest in Latin America. It's a huge valley, and wherever your sight, your eyes go, it's just like sugar cane. And what they have been doing is just like entering those plantations and cutting down the sugarcane by force. And so far, in as I said, from December 2014 to 2020, they have been able to liberate 4,000 hectares of sugarcane. So that's not small. How have they done that? Well, by putting their bodies in that task. To this day, 10 liberadores have been killed. They have had more than 600 attacks. And one of the main reasons for which I am looking for different venues and different places to talk about them is that since May, the number of attacks against them by different forces, and that's basically like the Colombian state, but also the whole grade of paramilitary forces in Colombia are attacking them because they continue to liberate Mother Earth from sugarcane plantations. Ardila Lule, Carlos Ardila Lule, who's basically like a very, very, very rich landowner in Colombia, is putting a price on their heads. So it's very important for all of us to know that this is what they are doing and that they are under attack. And I wouldn't be talking to you this morning if I hadn't asked for their permission, for the political commission to actually come and to come here and talk to you. And I asked them, what would solidarity look like for you? And they said, like, you know what, tell them that they need to liberate Mother Earth as well. Whatever they are, they need to do the same. It's not about us. It's not about like the Liberadores or the NASA people. It's about the urgent need that we all have, regardless of our place, to liberate Mother Earth. It's complicated because we feel sometimes that like what we have against us, and that can be like the state or even like the pandemia or whatever, it's so big and overwhelming. But if they're doing it and like they have literally everything against them and they haven't stopped and they will not stop, that gets you thinking like maybe what we have is just a lot of like fear and anxiety. And that, I think, in a way gets us back to the you question, because I feel that like a lot of many things in our societies are grounded on fear of repression, but also fear of not being able to achieve what we want in life. and in a way that also has removed our capacity to feel joy. And I think that that's also very important, because the liberadores also say what we want is paradise here and now. We are not struggling. We are not liberating Mother Earth only for the generations to come. We are liberating Mother Earth because it's joyful to do that. It feels good. And we do it collectively. We do it in the Minga. And we do it as a party. We dance and we eat and we cut down sugarcane. And that makes us happy. That gives us joy. So I think that that's also very important. And we need to be able to recover, to reconnect with both with that sense of pain and of basically everything that we are losing around us, as particularly in this time, but also with a sense of joy of being able to have a joyful, dignified life here and now. That's more or less what I have been learning, I would say.
I'm really excited about this idea of joy. It's been one of the interesting intersections of the politics of disorder that one can see around the Movement for Black Lives protests, for instance, that they've been effective because they prevent, you know, that they insist on disorder, of breaking the established order. But these are also protests in which people are joyful and in which pleasure is allowed, and in particular Black pleasure is allowed, which is a sort of prohibition in a certain kind of Western political aesthetic, where Donald Trump is only a friend to peaceful protesters, but joyful and disorderly protesters are not allowed. And I wonder if you can talk to a little bit about the aesthetics of what this moment requires. I mean, part of the reason why it's so hard to decolonize ourselves, we have no imagination about how to do that. And I wonder if you can maybe thread us through some of the ideas of, for example, what a food march looks like that is joyful.
Well, I think that I would like to perhaps start that with a recollection of the first time that I went to meet the liberadores, and that was in an international encounter or gathering. They have organized three so far. The fourth one was planned for basically August, September this year, but like obviously has been canceled or postponed rather. And basically the first time I got there, it was all very, very strange, because I'm used to these kind of international encounters, but not in Colombia and not in the Cauca region. So basically we got there and it was all very, very basic camping, but we were told that like we needed to have everything ready in our tents, because we couldn't know if there was going to be a police sort of like intention of getting us there through violence, right? Police entering the encampment. So, and that could happen at any moment or at any time. So we needed to be ready for that. So that's the first kind of like strange thing going through my body. But the second part was the international encounter started with everyone going to the sugarcane plantation and chopping down sugarcane. And it wasn't a matter of like presentations or speeches or who are you and where do you come from or what movement do you represent or what's your political analysis on this or that or whatever. It was like, okay, you're here and let's get your body working. Really like learn what we mean by like liberating Mother Earth. And when you are in a sugarcane plantation that size, of those dimensions basically, you feel really small. And you know that like the police or like the private guards of the plantation can arrive at any given time. So there's always this kind of like adrenaline rush or slightly like sense of fear. But at the same time, you know that like you're there with, I don't know, 700 or 1,000 people all chopping sugarcane down with you, and you feel that like you're there in a collective way, and you're all like achieving this task, and you feel somehow happy and glad that you're doing that, because not only, I mean, later on you learn that sugarcane plantation is basically like sucking up the water that has been under that land for at least 2,000 years, and that like it's basically like killing that tropical dry forest and everything else around, and like it just makes more sense. But in that moment, it's not an intellectual achievement. It's putting your body literally and doing that collectively, and you start like laughing and perhaps like doing a small competition with the people around you of who's going to chop more or cut down more sugarcane, and you feel thirsty, and people distribute chicha, which is basically a fermented alcoholic or slightly alcoholic drink with either made of corn or sugarcane, and you get a little bit tipsy, and then someone starts singing, and that's a way of being joyful at the end. You're doing something, and you're doing something that like is larger than yourself, and it's very practical, very concrete, and hopefully you think that like perhaps you go back next year, and in that land where sugarcane existed once, you probably find some corn or some cassava or some yuca or something that like, or perhaps a bit of tropical dry forest or something else. So it becomes really, really simple. It's not complicated. Like I think that the joy that we get from they said in Colombia la juntanza, of being together, of doing things together, and something that like we can all do. It's basically like becoming able again, because what like this system does is it makes us feel deeply unable. Like we are never enough. We are never good enough. We are never capable enough. Again, this idea of you're doing your bit today, you're doing what you can, you are becoming the best version of you. And the other bits that you need are not going to be yourself completed by yourself. You're going to like become a whole person by becoming just a small part of something bigger. And that feels good. Like it's fine. Like if you only did this today, that's fine, because other people like, and again, and this sounds, I think it's very other for our way of thinking, the rest will be done by Mother Earth. And this is something else that like it's very weird for us, but extremely powerful. They don't have a program. They are not like following a political set of ideas. I mean, they are very clear of what they want and how they're doing it, but like they said that they have been learning in the past 3 years, which is basically a very short period of time, that what they need to do is to reconnect with Mother Earth, and that like we are, as humans, we are all, we can only take two roles here. Either we help or enable Mother Earth to do what she needs to do, or we become an obstacle. But like the real struggle, the real, real struggle is right now, is the struggle that like Mother Earth is giving. And we are not important. As we need to understand as a human race and as a species, that we might disappear. And that might be fine. I mean, it's weird. It might be painful. I mean, there would certainly be a lot of like pain involved, but perhaps that's what something bigger than us needs. We need to perhaps start coming to terms with that. And I know that that's something really hard or complicated to think. But yeah, I think that perhaps we need to learn that like our own existence is not so important.
If I could jump in here, this is Charlotte. I just wanted to point to some of the things that Rita has just said to sort of make connections between different parts of it. But this notion of working together, physical work in collectivity, I think is really important, and physical movement, and just something that we, I think many of us are familiar with, that feeling of being a bigger organism. Just in a simple march, like recently here in Oakland, we've been marching a lot down the streets, and that moment when you're all walking together and in unison, you know, even with the dogs and the humans, and you know that you're in a same forward motion towards a common purpose, is incredibly joyful. And what that does for us metabolically, you know, in our bodies and how we're, you know, living this feeling of joy and common purpose, but also, you know, toward, I think what the Liberadores make very clear is this larger connection to the bigger purpose of liberation for all, right? So this larger life purpose of continuing life. So that's one thing I wanted to point out, this kind of metabolic, but that there's also a connection that we are reestablishing at that moment with that larger purpose. And many people can think of that differently, but I think when Rita's pointing to this not, you know, that it's not intellectual and it's much more embodied, but it's also, you know, there's something about this buen vivir that has been translated, first into Spanish, the good life, this search that we are all on to live meaningful lives, dignified lives. And in many languages, indigenous languages, there's that that concept, right, in Tzotzil and Tzeltal, Tojolabal, the Mayan languages of the highlands of Chiapas. They speak of Lekilkush Lejal. In many indigenous cultures around the world, there's this notion, right, that we are all striving for this way of living with dignity, well. But what does that mean, you know, fundamentally? I mean, we know, we Boaventura de Sousa Santos, the Portuguese philosopher, talks about, you know, that we've lost a spiritual connection with Mother Earth. And that's there's a lot of that in the mandar obedeciendo, which is a very difficult term to translate into English, because it raises all sorts of alarm bells from that individualist you. You know, mandar obedeciendo is leading by obeying. No, mandar obedeciendo is governing while obeying, or mandar being to sort of govern or lead. And then obedeciendo, to obey. And this is very complicated for the modern individualist self, because, you know, there's that anti-authoritarianism, and, you know, we are people in rebellion and resistance. But understanding that concept more deeply, that it's not about blindly following a leader, or it's about this reconnection with nature, that understanding that we are nature. It's not this Western notion of leadership. That is very complicated as well. It's about that reconnection that's happening when we're all working together, when you are working with plants, when you are working with bees, and, you know, also humans, that when we are listening and communicating. This is very hard for the Western human-centric mindset to imagine, that the notion of communication with the non-human, right? Because we are always the ones who are looking, the ones who are doing, to the plants, to the animals, to the earth. Mm-hmm. What if the earth is looking at us? What if the bee is looking at us? So this notion of understanding this more intersubjective relationship, mm-hmm, with not just the dog. I mean, dogs, we sort of give them a little more agency, mm-hmm, in that way. The bees, I mean, Rita's theorizing around how to change the world by gazing through the eyes of a bee, and a native bee at that, really profoundly shifted my own understanding of this when I heard her in Peru. And then thinking of it from the earth herself, or itself, if we don't want to avoid gendering, but the earth looking at us, and what if she cares for us too? So this is why I go into the embodied and sort of that mystery in our connection, you know, to not use the word spiritual again, but just to, you know, what if we open ourselves to another way of relating and listening to this planet, this earth, all that it contains, the microorganisms to the mountains. You know, it's very fantastical for the Western mind to understand this, but when you are really walking with these other ways of seeing, other ways of knowing, and other ways of feeling and sensing, it's really about a sensory experience too. That's why I say it's not like, you know, in the vague ether, it's in our bodies, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's really about opening that those capacities.
For the NASA, everything around us is alive, and everything around us is constantly communicating something. So, for example, they say that like birds are always like sending messages and stones and everything. So it's a matter of learning how to listen to those messages again. I know that like this for the West sounds like animism, basically. But perhaps it's just that we truly believe that reason has all the answers. And I think that like we should be able to be prepared to accept that, like, we don't have all the answers, and probably we don't need to have all the answers, more importantly.
I'm just thinking about the sort of cold heart of the Colombian state right now, with this right-wing ruler and the really tortured recent history in Colombia. And just sort of thinking through how much of a challenge this must be to the idea of the state. And, it's not surprising, the incredible hostility. And I guess the goal in movements like this is to create autonomy, right? To create a way of being outside of the state or apart from the state. Is that basically how it works there? Like, is that the goal? Is that sort of the long-term vision here?
I think it is. And I think that like, it has always been like that in a way. I feel that like we need to acknowledge that basically the nation state is such a modern and short-term invention. Like these people have more than 5,000 years inhabiting those territories, more or less in the same way. I mean, obviously changed profoundly by the Spanish conquest, but like what they are aiming at in a way is recovering that history of inhabiting those territories as they have done for 5,000 years at the very least. They are also doing a constant struggle to reclaim their language. They know, and we all know, that like language is what shapes our way of thinking and understanding the world around us. So it's going to be very difficult to liberate ourselves from our modern thinking if we only inhabit our colonial languages. So we need to learn also other languages to have other ways of thinking about reality and nature, for example. So it's a matter of how we cultivate food and how we cultivate everything else that is not food, how we reestablish our relationship with bees. And as Charlotte was saying, bees are native bees are a very important part of all this, at least, I think for me, but for other people, because they are the ones who have been able to create and recreate everything that is alive around us. And we don't even know how to look at them anymore. Like for most people, if I say bee. Like they already think of an imported bee that came from Europe, which is basically like Apis mellifera. But all the other like different species that we have in our territories are completely invisible to us. We don't know anything about them. So we need to start like rebuilding our relationship with our bees, with our plants, with our languages, and with our ways of inhabiting our territories. And yeah, I think that that's called autonomy. And I think that that's something that no one is going to do for ourselves. We need to start doing it ourselves, collectively. And as long as we keep on thinking that things are only going to change once that we seize power and we take control over the nation state, this is never going to change. I mean, I don't know how you guys see it in the US, but like here, I mean, I have no hope of anything changing in Mexican politics, whether that is with López Obrador. Of course not. He has a colonial project in mind. So and I don't see anyone in the political spectrum thinking differently, to be honest. So I don't think that I think that basically we have been barking at the wrong tree all this time and just wasting our very limited time and energy on this planet. So, but there are things that we can do, and we should be doing them right now, paradise now.
You're in a unique role as a translator also, translating the movement and speaking to people who are in all different areas of the world. I wonder about this process of translation. How are you navigating that?
Well, very uncomfortably, I have to say. I don't like my role, to be honest, because in a way, and I think that like I know a lot of like intellectuals and people in academia that do that, I don't want to make an intellectual career or a career on the back of other people who are putting their bodies and their basically effectively their blood. so for me, and I have I'm always doubting. I have very serious doubts. I talked to Charlotte about it. I talked to other friends about it, because this is a conversation that is not about me, and I don't want I want to be very careful with my role. I can share what I have learned and what I have asked permission to do. So, but like that's as far as it goes. I think that we can only talk about our own experience. But I have been very, very, very lucky to go to those places and to learn from these people. So I think that it's also very important to learn to decenter ourselves in this process.
I mean, I think part of what Rita's motioning towards with this deep discomfort, you know, of being in the role of translator. I mean, it's a role that many of us play when we inhabit different geographies and different cultural, or we have intersectional identities, and we are trying to reveal parts of one to the other in order to help support a larger understanding. But that this notion of translation is so fraught and so dangerous, where, I mean, it's one of the things that drew us to this conversation was hearing in different podcasts or seeing in different places how very well-intentioned people translate some of these concepts, right, in ways that, it's not just that it's not complete, we all know that a lot is lost in translation, but that sometimes the harm of that is done in, there's a harm done in a facile translation or in a literal translation that doesn't carry with it that metabolic embodied experience of time and cultural context that term has been built on throughout, you know, perhaps centuries or millennia. So therefore, I think a term that we are many of us are starting to embrace more in this role is that of interpretation, just acknowledging that we are people with our own identities and limited experiences, mm-hmm. which we bring to that act of translation. And therefore it is more accurately, or perhaps a better word would be that of interpreting. Each of us still are still interpreting our experiences. You know, Rita here, we're listening to her experience with the Liberadores, such a valuable experience that we can all learn from. And yet we should remember, you know, that she is one person that brings that reflection, right? That we are all mirrors of each other and mirrors of our experiences too. So it's just an attempt to be more honest with it, given the ways in which we view things. There was something else I wanted to say. Just to bring it back to this petition from the movement of the liberators of Mother Earth that Rita brought up a while ago, you know, where they are calling us to do our work in our place, whatever that, and in this case, they're saying, please liberate in your place, wherever you are, do what you need to do in your context to liberate Mother Earth, and it may look very different from what we're doing here with the sugarcane. The Zapatistas say something very different, right? When all of these activists come and want to be in solidarity with them and say, what can we do? How can we support you? They say, go back to your place and wherever you are living or inhabiting or from, because it looks different for many of us. You know, do that work or join those struggles. Don't necessarily try to reinvent something or impose something, but join those existing struggles for our mutual liberation.
So on that question, I think here in the US, we've got this really strong and pervasive ideology of American exceptionalism. I feel like that ideology has definitely infiltrated liberal thinking and even to some extent left-wing thinking. And I feel like there is a dawning realization that we are a settler colonialist nation built on slavery and land theft from indigenous people and enslaved labor. Just wondering how we can use some of the insights developed in the South, in indigenous movements in the South, and bring them up here. I mean, we have our own indigenous movements up here. Black Rock was a social movement success, or Standing Rock, I should say. And I'm just wondering, how can we do the work of liberating Mother Earth here in the United States now, especially at this moment where we're in a pandemic and we're in an uprising over violence against Black people? I'd love to get both of your insights on that.
I would say the obvious thing that, like, it's very difficult for one person to provide an answer to such a broad question. Again, the answer is how we understand and how we deal with health and security and, like, inhabiting our territories again. I think that it has to be something simple, and I think that, like, it has to be something where we acknowledge what we are. When they ask me how I would like to present myself, another answer that I commonly give is that, like, I don't think that I'm a mestizo woman, because I think that, like, mestizo only means a way of whitening ourselves. And this mix of identities, and as a result, I don't know who I am any longer. And I think that, like, the difference between us and indigenous peoples, I think here, in Mexico, in Colombia, is that, like, at least they have a clear idea of their historical path, and we somehow lost that. But again, the Liberadores say that, like, they are liberating Mother Earth not only for the Nasa people, and this is not a sort of, like, political or ontological project for themselves, but for everything else. They say that, like, we need to on wire to desalambrar, we need to learn to cut these wires around us. So I think that, like, in a way, perhaps the first step is to try to find a collective we again, a sense of community. And the only way to build a sense of community and a community is with the other, because otherwise you're just building family, right? with everyone around you is things more or less the same. That's a different kind of like relationship. We need to start building communities. We need to play down our individual selves and think more collectively. That's something that is very difficult in urban areas and in areas where like individualistic ways of thinking have permeated everything around us. But that's, I think, part of the task at hand, and build community with the other communities, with the bee community, with the plant community, with the virus community, with the bacteria community. I mean, this is something that we ought to be learning from this pandemic, that like we are deeply interconnected, and this is happening because we felt somehow superior to other species, and that like we can control everything. But like I think that like what has happened is that the modern way of thinking has been brought to its knees. Now we are scared of going outside. We are scared of talking to other people. We are scared of hugging each other because something bad is going to happen to us. And that's, of course, a very real fear. But we have created this because of our thinking that we can control everything and we cannot control everything. And perhaps that's a good thing, because if we could control everything, perhaps we would have destroyed everything by now. Charlotte.
Well, one of the things that comes to mind, Tom, in terms of what we can learn is that, and this is just expanding on what Rita has just said, but these in connecting to each other really for real and more broadly, I go back again to the example that Rita brought us from the Liberadores of the food march, where we have the, you know, people in this movement of liberating sugarcane and liberating Mother Earth in very tenuous circumstances, with the threat of the military police, with the enormity of the sugarcane, which is pretty hard to cut down, and just the conditions, the difficult conditions that they are in every day, sending food to their counterparts, those from below, the people in the cities who are in the most marginalized neighborhoods of the cities nearby. And this action of feeding others in moments of duress, that solidarity from the rural to the urban sector, for me is very powerful, you know. And I mean, what could be more basic, you know, than feeding each other in this reconstruction of our tejido común, as we say, of our common weave, not just as humans or human society, but as Rita is proposing, as interspecies community, as a global, you know, when we think global, we think of humans, but so much is interwoven in our interwoven communities, interspecies communities, is this feeding each other, which of course, insects, plants, Mother Earth herself, are always feeding us, you know, and this invisible slave labor, you know, that has gone even unrecognized, but even it's not even in our consciousness, right, of how we have enslaved, you know, the earth herself or the earth itself over time. So waking up that consciousness of that we are interwoven across the world, across species, with the earth, and focusing on nourishing that connection with each other, literally through feeding each other. So that includes feeding the animals, feeding the plants. And what do we need to do to get there? And this visual image that Rita brings up with the alambrar, or not Rita, but the movement of Liberadores de la Madre Tierra, is the image of barbed wire. So the image of barbed wire is we are wrapped in like threads and threads, yards and yards, meters and meters, so much length of barbed wire in our condition as colonized peoples and psyches, mm-hmm. that we sometimes were just paralyzed in that barbed wire. So the image that is offered to us with this alambrar, to unwrap these coils of barbed wire, is a process that will take the rest of our lives, of course, but that we need to engage in consciously. How do we start to, you know, from this place of tremendous captivity and paralysis, start to cut those barbed wires that are holding us so tightly? And I think the movement offers that process, this desalambrar, this cutting through the barbed wire. It's a very powerful image. And so I think that's what they offer us, you know, which is the process of decolonization. But you know, that word can just be so meaningless if we don't really help each other figure out concrete ways of doing that through the nourishing, the feeding, and the care. I mean, care, this is all about caring for each other, caring for the earth, care work, and all the work that has been done about theorizing and conceptualizing what it means to care for each other. That deep tenderness and care is at the root of this.
I would like just to add something, sorry, that they say that para desalambrar la tierra, la madre tierra, primero hay que desalambrar el corazón. So to unwire Mother Earth, and that's basically like to get rid of everything that like is separating and basically like the basis of private property, I would say. First, we need to unwire our hearts and minds. So it's this very physical, but spiritual and emotional connection to Mother Earth. And it's, I wouldn't say like it's only reversing, but like it's really reconnecting what we think with how we feel and with what we do in our everyday lives. Again, this is bringing us back to the notion of this must start today, not tomorrow. And it's not something that someone else is going to do for us. We ourselves, with these bodies and with the people around us and with the other beings around us, spiritual beings as well, we all have to be doing this now, not yesterday and not tomorrow, but today.
You've been listening to The Secret Ingredient, a podcast produced at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas. You can subscribe to The Secret Ingredient wherever you get podcasts, and please take a moment to rate and review us. It really helps people find the show. Special thanks to Miles Bloxon of KUT, and of course to our guests, Rita Valencia and Charlotta Sainz. You can find more information on Rita, Charlotta, and Proceso de Liberación de la Madre Tierra in the show notes. The Secret Ingredient is hosted by Raj Patel, Tom Philpott, and myself. For KUT Radio, I'm Rebecca McEnroy. Thanks for listening.